Today, Indiana could mark the last stand of the Stop Trump movement. Voters seem set to push the New York billionaire to the edge of the Republican presidential nomination. Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders continues to vow to take his campaign to the floor of the Democratic convention. And then there's that tragic story of despair in the Pacific Island nation of Nauru, where two asylum seekers are set themselves on fire to protest Australia's immigration policies. Those are the stories on the mind of news analyst Neil Conan this week as he joins us from his Macnut farm on the Big Island, as he does most Tuesdays. Good morning.
Good morning, Bethann.
Okay, so let's pick up from last week. Now, you said that Indiana would mark the effective end of the Republican presidential nomination saga. Will it be all but over when the votes are counted in the Hoosier State a little later today?
Well, Bethann, I was wrong.
I love a man who can say that.
Donald Trump's five wins were much more comprehensive last week than I thought they would be. He won every congressional district, every county in those five states, and almost every available delegate. So while Ted Cruz has been working hard in Indiana and vows to keep on fighting, it's over.
Senator Cruz broke precedent to announce a running mate late last week. He said that Carly Fiorina would be his choice for vice president if he got the nomination. But how does all this fit now, you know, if the campaign is effectively over?
Well, yeah, desperate times, desperate measures. On top of the crushing defeats in the Northeast, it's been just a horrible week for Ted Cruz. The VP announcement fell flat as, the president-vice president team fumbled the salute. They couldn't find each other's hands to raise in that salute. Cruz held a rally in the basketball gym where the team from the tiny town of Hickory won a miracle championship immortalized in the movie Hoosiers, and all he got was mockery after he called the hoop not a rim, but a ring. He got the endorsement of Governor Mike Pence. You'd think that would be important, but an incredibly lukewarm endorsement. Pence spent almost as much time praising Trump as he did praising Cruz, and then Trump got an arguably more important endorsement from the former basketball coach of Indiana University, Bobby Knight. Just a terrible week for Cruz.
Now, Notre Dame football coach Lou Holtz also came out for Trump, too. And the polls, of course, are showing Trump with a solid lead.
Yeah, John Kasich kept his part of that, you know, much-hyped agreement. And he did not campaign actively in Indiana, but that didn't make any difference, it turns out. The Fiorina announcement didn't make any difference. And what looked like a winnable primary as late as a week ago now looks totally out of reach, and Trump looks unstoppable. He will win the Republican nomination on the first ballot.
So what happens to the Republicans who have vowed never Trump? I mean, they've been running ads against him, and since Florida, you know, this was the group that, outside of the Cruz and Kasich campaigns, you know, what happens to all of these people now?
They have to decide. You know, some are going to rally around the party. Some will sit out the presidential election and work for Republican House and Senate candidates, and some will cross the lines and support Hillary Clinton as the lesser of two evils. It was interesting. I just saw a tweet from Mark Salter, who, of course, is a longtime associate of John McCain's and co-author of his books, supporting Hillary Clinton. David Brooks, the New York Times columnist, who's also on PBS and NPR, Brooks calls this an historic moment, equivalent, he says, to McCarthyism in the 50s. Wow. Republicans have to be able to look their grandchildren in the eyes and say what they did when their party nominated such a totally unacceptable candidate, you know, a bigot who says such hateful things and condones violence at rallies, and is so ignorant of the world. Andrew Sullivan, another conservative writer, went even further. He called this an extinction event for the party, a step toward tyranny, and I'm not sure how many in the party rank and file are going to follow intellectuals like them. But watch what the Bushes do. Watch Mitt Romney and watch John McCain, the last two nominees, and watch Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, and the man who's going to be holding the gavel when that convention starts in Cleveland.
All right, let's flip over to the less apocalyptic side. Hillary Clinton's victories last week were almost as big as Trump's. Bernie Sanders did win Rhode Island. Her lead is about as big as it was before he had that run where he won 7 out of 8. But he refuses to concede. He said on Sunday that he will take his campaign all the way to the convention in Philadelphia.
And his frustration with the party and the process and with Hillary Clinton is beginning to show. She irritates him even more by clearly turning to the general election and to Donald Trump and all but ignoring him and acting the part of the presumptive nominee. He fulminates at the establishment that he says rigged the system against insurgents like him, And then he argues that he still has a path to win the nomination if superdelegates, of course, which is that very same establishment, abandon Secretary Clinton and flip to him.
Abandon the candidate who's won the most states, the most votes, and the most delegates, too?
Absolutely right. So that's not going to happen. The polls show he's close in Indiana. He could win West Virginia and Kentucky later this month. It's close in California. I have to say that Clinton is ahead both in Indiana and California, according to the polls. But Clinton looked very solid in New Jersey. And the last contest is Washington, D.C., which will be a blowout win for her. It's just not going to happen for him. Hillary Clinton will win easily on the first ballot. Now, of course, he's perfectly justified to stay in the race to give his supporters an opportunity to vote, but he needs to decide when to accept defeat and focus on Donald Trump. And it's getting to the point now where, you know, some of his diehard supporters are enlisting in the Bernie or bust effort. Tens of thousands of them say they'll vote Green Party or not vote at all. And some even think he's setting himself up to run as an independent.
Didn't he say, though, at the start of all this, just a year ago, didn't he say that he really didn't want to be a Ralph Nader, that he would join the Democratic Party and run just as a Democrat?
Yeah, and I don't think he wants to squander everything he's accomplished. As he always reminds us, a year ago when he made that decision, he was at 3% in the polls. He has done amazing things. He has changed the party. He's changed Hillary Clinton. He's energized a new generation. But his fundraising is down. He's laid off a couple of hundred campaign staff. That's never a good sign. Now, in the Senate, Sanders has a reputation as, you know, yes, an idealist, but a pragmatist, too, to get what's gettable. Push the party. So, you know, he can push the party on $15 minimum wage. He can, the goal of universal health care or free college tuition, push for rules changes on superdelegates, and he may not get all of that, but get what's gettable and learn to live with it.
Which is why the whole tenor of his campaign seems to be changing. But, okay, I don't want to let you go without asking you about this truly terrible story. You've been following it in the Pacific News Minute about the Australian detention camp in Nauru, where two asylum seekers set themselves on fire in protest. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the first is an Iranian man. He died of his injuries. The second, a young woman from Somalia, is in very serious condition in the hospital in Australia. This goes back 4 years. 2011, 2012, the number of migrants trying to reach Australia by boat surged. Obviously, these are desperate people, Iranians, Kurds, Somalis, Bangladeshis, Rohingyas. They paid people smugglers who overloaded them aboard rickety boats, and no one can say for sure, but dozens of people are believed to have drowned. Australia says its policy is designed to deter those boats. They insist no one who tries to come in illegally by sea will ever get asylum in Australia. So they set up camps on remote islands, one in Papua New Guinea and one on Nauru, to detain these migrants while their claims to asylum were processed. If they're found to qualify as refugees, they will be resettled, but in Nauru or PNG, not Australia. Mm-hmm. And they even made a deal to resettle people in Cambodia. And, you know, on the one hand, the deterrence part of this seems to have worked. Many fewer boats are making the attempt. On the other, the offshore detention camps have been a disaster. No more than a handful of people have been resettled anywhere. And after more than 2 years in limbo, people are really getting desperate.
So how many people are we talking about?
About 350 men, women, and children in Nauru, another 850 on Manus Island in Papua New Guinea. They're all men there. So the numbers are not huge, but the Australian government argues this is just the tip of the iceberg. If they let these migrants into Australia, tens of thousands will follow. Their critics say the policy is racist and inhumane. But this may be coming to a head now. The Supreme Court in PNG just ruled that the camp there is unconstitutional and has to be closed. So Australia needs to figure out what to do with those 850 men. The government's reaction to the self-immolations on Nauru has sounded awfully callous. And there's about to be an election in Australia in early July. And immigration policy is clearly going to be a big issue.
And I know that we're going to keep following that and having more conversations about it. Thanks, Neil. Talk to you next week.
You bet, Bethann.
News analyst Neil Conan joins us from the farm most Tuesdays. You can also hear his Pacific News Minutes right here on Hawaii Public Radio.